Oh, good evening, Karen. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for joining us on a Friday night.
Oh, no worries. Thank you very much for inviting me in.
I thought we might start the discussion just with the unemployment figures generally and the relatively low unemployment statistics for the quarter leading to June having come under fire, because many economists say that they're skewed. And also in these figures is a term that people are just learning what it is, and it's called underutilisation. Those are people who were unemployed, as well as those people who were employed, but they'd like to work more hours.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a scary figure. So when people talk about the unemployment rate, you think, oh, well, that doesn't look that bad. But actually, when you look at the underutilization rate, that's when, you know, alarm bells really go. Because, yes, as you say, those are people who are unemployed and looking for jobs, as well as those people who are in work and wanting more hours. And certainly we saw in the June quarter report that an increase in that underutilization rates. And may I say, Karen, if you break that down, break that general figure down, if you look at it by ethnicity, you know, what has been in the past in good times was really, really bad for Māori and Pacific. So, you know, their underutilization rates were in the 20s. So, again, I can only imagine what it would be now at this point in time. But also if we think about our women who are disabled, you know, who want a job, you know, qualified, or that you want to get into the workforce, I mean, their underutilization rates will be much, much higher than that 12% that's been put out.
Now, if we break that down even further and we look at the roles that, let's say, Māori and Pacific are doing, the jobs that they're doing and the jobs that women are doing.
Yeah, for Pacific, for example, you know, actually, if you look at young people generally, you know, we're heavily in manufacturing, also around hospitality, retail, you know, those, perhaps not so much manufacturing, but hospitality, retail, tourism, you know, where lots of Māori and Pacific are. I mean, those are the the areas that have been really hit. And then they're not likely to pick up as people continue to lose their jobs. People won't be spending and going to the shops. We won't be having, you know, much money to spend on restaurants and outings and things like that. So it's not going to recover soon. And we have to do something different to try and channel that talent to somewhere else where they can have secure and meaningful work. But it doesn't matter where you are. You're not quite sure if your job is going to last into the next, you know, the next couple of years. I mean, certainly the figures are showing that the most vulnerable jobs are the low-paid jobs, so the jobs below 50K. But we're also losing jobs at the top level where women are at. But I think there's not as much noise about the loss of those executive roles. But it is happening there as well.
Yeah, probably they wouldn't get as much sympathy, perhaps. That may be the case. So you mentioned hospitality, and of course that's obvious because restaurants and cafes and it weren't open, and tourism. So nobody's coming to New Zealand, so those jobs are closed down. So are women overrepresented in those areas?
Yes, they are. They are, and that's probably partially explains the huge proportion of the job losses being for women. So, you know, one of the proposals that's been put up is perhaps if they go into trades, you know, go into the shovel-ready projects and, you know, try and encourage them to go into trades. Well, that will be really fantastic. But that's assuming that if they enter into an apprenticeship or skills training, that there will be a job at the end. So what we need to see is an alignment between the public investment in apprenticeships and tertiary education and the job need. Otherwise, we're investing a lot, but not necessarily getting the outcome that, you know, that people going into study, especially women, need to get at the end. So I'm not hearing yet any information in the public from government about ensuring that pipeline is getting there. So we need some assurance that that is happening. Otherwise, it's false hope, right?
It
you
is.
You can't just go into training just because it's there. We want to make sure that we invest, you know, our time and our training into something that will deliver us a job. And I think, you know, generally, if you're going to retrain, then, you know, you anticipate that you probably be earning a lower income if you're starting a new field. So people can't dwell in that for too long. So, yeah.
I believe your own daughter retrained as a welder, but she can't get a job.
Yes. So, and she's very, very determined that she'll find one. And with that attitude, I'm very proud. With that attitude, I'm sure she will. But not every young person has a parent who knows the system. And can help her navigate. You know, a lot of young people don't have that. I'm thinking again about our Māori and Pacific young people. They may not necessarily have adults in their home with the confidence to be able to help them navigate some of that stuff and to keep them going. So, our young people are really quite vulnerable.
There also needs to be some kind of drive that attracts women to those trades, that they feel that they're going to be comfortable in those trades, that it's not going to be an environment that they won't be able to handle.
Yeah.
Scary place to go. Have you had a word with Shane Jones about the Provincial Growth Fund in terms of, you know, where that money can be funnelled?
I have written to a number of cabinet ministers. I wrote to them in early May, invited them to a meeting because we had some ideas, and these aren't ideas that I came up with myself. Ideas that come from women, ideas that have come from United Nations assessment of our human rights records. And they did offer me a meeting in July, but unfortunately I got sick. And with the new government, with the election coming up, I'm thinking perhaps I should wait to see who gets in and then have some constructive conversations. But you did write something earlier on, Karen, that made me think getting women into, male-dominated industries also requires that they're safe in those industries. And, the two things have to go hand in hand. We've heard enough about bullying and sexual harassment. It happens in places where there's a huge power imbalance and where women aren't necessarily at the top or where they're male-dominated industries. We want them to be safe. So it's not just getting the job, not just getting a decent pay and decent conditions. We also want the cultures in those male-dominated industries and workplaces to be safe and honouring the dignity of our women.
Yeah, how many women do you think would like to go into the trades?
Oh, I used to be a chemist.
Yes.
I loved that. You know, I love maths and science. My daughter, loves that. So, I can't predict how many, but we're in 2020 now.
Yes, so 2020
years. Like because that's,
I suppose I think of the trades like building and mechanic and even welding. They're quite physical jobs.
Yeah, but it's like if you're building a road, so not everybody has to be driving the the digger.
The articulated lorry, right.
So someone's managing the project, someone's doing the logistics, someone's ordering the materials. So just because it's a roading project, it doesn't mean that all the jobs are associated with the physical part of it. And also, because of flexible work now, a road can be built in Northland, and you can be based in Auckland doing online stuff for you. So we have to think quite creatively, because when we do that, then we think, oh, actually, there's no reason why a disabled person can't be employed in a shovel-ready project, but not necessarily to be doing the physical stuff.
You're quite right.
Yeah.
You're quite right. I'm definitely limiting my thinking there. when I hear the word trades, I instantly think, could I handle that? But you're right, there's so many other jobs in the background of that. If you're not capable of doing the physical work or you don't want to.
That's right.
So that's great. All right, so as we discussed earlier, after the election, do you think there'll be some serious meetings you'll be having then?
I will certainly be pursuing that. And, like I said, it's not like we've got, solutions come out of the blue. Simple ones like procurement. Can we have targets in those government procurement arrangements where there's targets or a certain proportion of jobs go to women? In the early childhood education, can we make that free so women can be more engaged in work and go out to study and so forth? The volunteer sector, another word for volunteers, unpaid work.
Yes.
And we know women do a huge amount of the unpaid work. There's a lot of volunteering work that women do in the health sector, social services, even, giving legal advice. So why don't we look at unpaid work and pay it? Because if we removed all the unpaid work, I would probably doubt that we will be able to continue as a society. So why don't we look at paying for volunteer work?
not a bad idea. And what would you say to those who are struggling now, particularly women? What's some advice you could give them?
Well, my advice is don't limit yourself. Because what we know is, women will look at the job description and go, oh, no, I can't do all of that, and then count themselves out. Men will look and they can think, oh, I can do 30 or 40% of that. Yeah, I'll go for it. So go for it.
Right.
And that's advice that's come to me from, a well-known recruitment agency. We just undersell ourselves. Of course we can do it. Go for it.
I love your thinking. Great to talk to you tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Karen. Yemenuya.